Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a healthy, happy life. As such, we've set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect through emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and callers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lights online. Listen to your favorite teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. Join me. My name is Luciana Stiglich, and I live in Peru, where we unravel each topic hand in hand with each of my bright guests. These shows are made for you and because of you, so feel free to share your questions or comments live either through the chat room or by calling in number 323-693-3816. Shows are recorded, so if not able to listen live, you can download each as a podcast to listen on your way to work or anytime you feel like receiving guidance and inspiration. Help me welcome our today's guest. Our month topic will be vulnerability, and introducing Lynn Forrest. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, how are you, Luciana?
Hi, Lynn. Thank you for being with us today. It's an honor to have you here on our show.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you as always.
Thank you. So tell us, you've written this book on victimhood. How would you say that victimhood relates to the reason why we do not like to show ourselves as vulnerable to others?
Well, I think because most of us are walking around feeling wounded on some level. And anytime we feel wounded, the natural response is to defend, is to be a defense. Build a fence around us, so to speak, so that we don't feel so vulnerable, so exposed to danger.
Mhm. So why is it we feel in danger?
Well, most of it, if we go all the way back to childhood, basically, I think you could boil it down to the real reason what most of us walk around feeling in danger is because we had some experience early in life and may even still be having experiences in life. Usually once it starts, it's ongoing. But some experience where we felt misunderstood, rejected, abandoned, neglected, and we create in our minds an idea about ourselves in relation to the world that says we are not safe, that says that we can't trust people to be there for us, that says there's that we're going to have to do it all ourselves. There's nothing that we have to somehow take care of ourselves. And so, again, that's what leads us to becoming invulnerable or trying to live an invulnerable life.
In your book, you talk about the triangle of victimhood. So are people in this triangle observing the world differently in regards to how it affects us?
Well, the first thing I would say about that is that most of us, everyone I know for sure, move in and out of that victim triangle all day long. So we're all walking around with a history, with some sort of unhappy idea about who we are in the world. So all of us are operating on that, and moving off of it is the way to move towards a place of more vulnerability, which I believe is a state of openness for true healing to take place. We have to become vulnerable, not endangered, but we have to pull away from the insidiousness.
So would you say there are certain characteristics on the person which somehow make them feel more or less endangered disregarding what's exactly happening in the reality.
Most of what we see happening, we create a story about whatever is happening, whatever we see happening around us. And so, and that is what precipitates our sense of danger. The reality, if we come into true reality and not our personal reality, not our story about reality, but really reality, real reality, when we come into alignment with that, then we understand that we are safe, and that's because we understand the way life, the constructs of life, and we understand that what is happening around us is a reflection for us and of us rather than something happening to or against us. And that begins to move us away from invulnerability to a more open space.
I was just talking to a client, and I told her that we were about to make this show, and I was telling her, why would you say that it's difficult for us to live with vulnerability in the face of others? And she looked at me and she said, because I don't want to. So what would you tell people who really do not want to be vulnerable in front of others?
Well, I would ask them to explore why that is. Most people, the reason that is because being vulnerable means being exposed, means being at the mercy of, means putting myself out there in the way of harm or danger. And so, of course, who would want that? I can't say as I blame her if that's her idea of what being vulnerable is. And so we have to redefine what vulnerability is and begin to... And the only way we can do that is we have to find that safe space that lives within us. We stop looking outside world to provide our safety, begin to understand that that's an inside job, that that's something that comes from inside out, not outside in.
Mm-hmm. Would you say meditation can help us connect with that safe space inside?
Absolutely. Sort of inner too, that has us looking at the way we think about life is going to help.
What other things that you know or that you've tried on your clients can help people do this, help them connect back with their safe place inside?
I think that it's learning sort of the principles of life, learning what the principles or constructs of reality are, and aligning with those. Like in my book, I outlined 14 guiding principles, and these are the guiding principles or constructs of reality. In other words, they define reality. In other words, when we are aligned with reality, when we're seeing the world through the lens of reality, we are seeing them through these guiding principles. Guiding principles, for instance, that say the world is a mirror, that there are no accidents and no coincidences, that understands the guiding principle, that understands that our feelings come from our own thoughts, not from what's happening outside of us. And so aligning with those guiding principles and then using techniques and methods to help us align with those guiding principles, like meditation. I also am a firm believer that in any sort of physical alignment work, Pilates, yoga, the martial arts, and Qigong, any form of Qigong, Tai Chi or Aikido or any of those sorts of, or the healing arts of Qigong, all of those are ways that we can tap into the governing principles of reality and begin to move ourselves towards an internal safe space.
Mm-hmm. And what about regular exercise, going to the gym? Does that help as well?
Well, it will help the physical, and it might give you a sense of more, it could help, yeah. It could give you a sense of feeling grounded and more physically able, and it might build up your story of being better able to protect yourself. But again, the difference between a workout at the gym and the kind of work internal work I'm talking about that we find through yoga, for instance, is that we are looking inside for that source of protection rather than outside. In other words, instead of building my body up so that it can handle more physically, so that I can feel safer physically, you know, I'm bigger, I'm bulkier, I'm stronger, that sort of thing, which is certainly an approach to feeling safer. But the problem is that it still leaves me at the mercy of that person or that force that's bigger, stronger still. And so whereas through yoga and meditation, those sorts of things, I'm building up perhaps physically. I am getting physically stronger, but more importantly, I'm beginning to recognize and come into alignment with that which is bigger still and stronger still, that source of protection that is universal, that is available to us simply for the seeking of it and the aligning with it.
Mm-hmm. In the article we published on our Inner Healers blog, you talk about the art of surrendering. Can you talk to us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, I think that surrender is what is a necessary step for the kind of vulnerability that has to do with opening the heart so that we can receive that input from universal source. And so I wanted to sort of define that. Surrender is acting of releasing, of relaxing, rather than defending, protecting, which is what we do when we think that we need to protect ourselves from external factors.
Mm-hmm. And why does this article have "Dying to Live" as a title? What did this mean to you?
Yeah, dying to live. It means that for me, the art of living life includes a practice of dying every day. And that means, and dying is a word that is interchangeable with the word surrender. So that what I'm dying to are my old defensive lifestyle, my old lifestyle of defensive behaviors and reactions that keep me in a sort of hyper alert, boarded off, guarded place. Whereas dying, the practice of dying every day is one of opening, softening, beginning to allow myself to be permeated by that which breathes me, really, that moves me, and that, in fact, can protect me, which really is the only thing that is can ultimately protect me, is that force.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned this phrase, which I loved, death is not the enemy. What can you tell us about this? Kim?
Yeah, I learned Don Juan's books written by Carlos Castaneda. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Back in the 70s, they were written Don Juan, Another Reality, A Separate Journey, et cetera, et cetera. And Don Juan was a Yaqui Indian medicine man. And I'm hearing a lot of music. Whether that's interfering with my voice or not. Are you able to hear me still?
Yes, perfectly.
Okay. So, the Indian sorcerer, he was called, and one of the things he taught, one of the lessons he taught, was that one of death as an advisor, as a counselor. And I loved that idea that he presented of, and he presented it as a very visceral thing of death sitting on the left shoulder of us, sitting on our left shoulder, and that the idea being that live every moment, to live every day with death as your advisor. So you look, when you get ready to make a choice, when you get ready to make a decision, you look to death and you say, if this were my last moment, what would I do? If this were my last day on earth, What would I choose here? What would I do this if I knew that this were the end? And in that way, we begin to befriend death. We begin to see it as that which motivates us, to do that which will best serve us. And so I think that's what I mean. Death is not the enemy. Death is, in fact, a friendly force. And the other thing is, who really, in their right mind, would give up our ticket? Death is our ticket off of this plane. And as much as we are afraid of it, and we talk about that, and we try to stay alive as long as we can and all those things, if we knew that there was no way of ever getting off this planet called Earth, would we really choose that? Would we want to stay here forever and ever, Earth being what it is? I don't know. I think that would be a hard one. It would be a hard one for me to say yes to. So again.
So for you, death is actually a friend who can teach us the art of surrendering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well put. Thank you. Yeah.
And would you say there's a relation between our need for control and our inability to express vulnerability?
Absolutely. The need to control comes from a belief, comes from fear. Fear and control are always aligned somehow. And fear, it's the fear of being at the mercy of some outside source, which is, again, we look at that triangle. There's three roles on that victim's triangle. There's the victim at the bottom. It's an upside-down triangle. And then at the top two corners, there's the rescuer and the persecutor. And here's the way that works. When we are feeling at the mercy of something outside of us, he's making me feel bad, she won't let me, they're getting in the way of, I'm seeing some outside influence, some outside person or situation as being in control of my well-being. And so what we immediately do when we're on the victim triangle is we decide, all right, or the way we get on the triangle is we decide, okay, that outside thing is, I'm at the mercy of that outside force. And so what I need to do is either one of three things, either go into a deeper collapse, which is go deeper into victim and just sort of collapse, give up, don't even try, just whatever, or I can decide to try to triumph over it by either moving into what we call the rescuer role. And the rescuer role is sort of, it's actually deceiving because it looks helping others, but in reality, when we rescue other people, we're doing that so that we can feel safe, so that we can feel in charge, because the way we rescue is we very often take over sort of the life of, so to speak, that person we're rescuing. It's like I now become the one in control of what they need to be doing or what their life situation is so that to protect them, when in reality what I'm trying to do is protect myself. So I either go, I try to control the world by fixing it, making it a better place, making it a friendlier place, a safer place. I move into rescuer or the opposite, which is the persecutor. I decide that I'm going to control through fear and intimidation. I'm going to teach them a lesson. I'm going to hurt them before they can hurt me. And both of those are forms of control that have to do with feeling vulnerable and trying not to feel vulnerable.
Usually when we are young, we take many risks and we push the limits. What would you say changes when we are grown-ups and we kind of fear so much that we even paralyze ourselves in the face of change or in the face of new opportunities that are shown to us in our daily lives?
Oh, that's a good question, Luciana. I think that every time, what happens on our life journey is that every time we go into that victim place, of feeling at the mercy of something outside of us. Every time something happens that we feel at the mercy of, or feel done in by, or run over by, or attacked, or hurt, then what we do is we take another trip around that triangle. We move back, and we move to either rescuer or persecutor, end up back in victim, and reinforce. And what it does is it reinforces the notion that the world is an unsafe place. And what we tend to do is we give away our freedom of expression in order to protect ourselves. It's like, in order, all right, so it's dangerous, so I need to control more. All right, well, I just need to not say that anymore, and I need not to do that anymore. And it happens on both the internal level as humans. It also happens on a societal level, where the more we feel threatened by outside forces, the more willing we are to sort of incarcerate ourselves, put ourselves in a jail of our own making in order to, quote, protect ourselves from those outside forces. And so we become less and less free, less and more inhibited, less and less able to take risks that grow and evolve us. In essence, we become more shut down, less. Yeah, are you there? I lost you.
Yes, I'm listening. So I have one last more question for you. Would you say that accepting and expressing vulnerability without the need to control others just because we feel that way can help us get out of the victimhood triangle in some way?
Right. In order to get off that triangle, and in order to move towards a space of safety, a sense of inner safety, the only way that's going to happen, we're not going to be able to be vulnerable as long as we feel at the mercy of an outside world. So what we have to do then is we move into what I call observer consciousness, which is that ability to step back, align with reality, what is true, and by remembering that there is a bigger source than us we are aligned with, that actually breathes us, guides us, prompts us, moves us, and surrender more to that line of safety so that that then prompts and informs our movement so that we can trust. Because only through vulnerability is there trust. We cannot trust as long as we are feeling invulnerable and unsafe. And so lining up with is real so that we can open more and surrender to a deeper place. That is the goal.
So would surrendering be a synonymous to dying?
Yes. Dying to the ego, what we call the ego, or the victim consciousness. We are dying to that part of us that believes that we have to live in a defensive mode in order to survive. So we move away from survival. We die to all that defensive, all those defensive mechanisms in order to find the new life within us, the new being that then emerges. And it really is. It's process, this dying into a new self.
So when you talk about our ego dying, it's like we're constantly dying many times in our life, right? It's like you were saying in your article, dying or the death-birth cycle is part of our very DNA.
That's right. We come in knowing how to do it. It's encoded in our DNA. We absolutely know how to die. And and I'm talking about physiologically, anatomically, we know how to die. The body has a whole process it takes us through in order to drop the body. But there's also just as intricate a process for dropping the mental image of a self, a false self that we die to and we drop. There's a process for that, and it's the process of transformation, transforming that old defensive nature into an open, supported, aligned with reality new being.
There's one more phrase that I liked from your article, and it says, it's actually a saying from Socrates. He used to say that, or he used to remind those around him that one should always be occupied in the practice of dying, right?
Right. Exactly. That's exactly it. And for me, that's what my daily practice is. I end up laying down on the mat in a yoga, in Shavasana, the yoga pose, of just really letting go of all the muscles and giving myself internally to that which holds me. I envision myself held in the arms of that which knows me best, loves me most, guides, prompts, and protects me.
Mm-hmm. So, how would you say vulnerability can help us experience safety and security?
Because it opens us. Because it opens us to that in a real way. Because as long as I'm closed off, as long as I always get an image in my mind of defended as being me inside a fortress of my own making, made of brick. It has no windows in it. Nothing can get into me, that's for sure. I am protected. Nothing can get to me, but also I can't get out. So it becomes both my protective fortress as well as my prison. And there is no growth there. So surrendering into vulnerability means finding holes. Do we have time? I'll tell you a quick dream about that. Do we have a minute more?
Yes, we do.
I dreamed once. This was years ago. I had a dream, and in the dream was an old woman, a white-headed old woman, and I recently came to realize that that old woman was me now. I'm not that old, but I'm 60, and this dream took place when I was about 25 or 30. But I saw an old woman in my dream, and she was look what she was crocheting or knitting something. And I sort of was walking up to her trying to see, well, what is it you're making? And she looked up, saw me, and saw that I was trying to see, and she held up this cloth, and it was full of holes. It just had all these holes carefully embroidered or, you know, in it. And she said to me, "You must become like this cloth, full of holes, in order for spirit to shine through you." Of what vulnerability is. It's us filling our ego full of holes, all those defensive beliefs and ideas we have that keep us locked up in our self-made prison, thinking that we have to protect ourselves, shoot holes in, to make windows where once were doors, so that we can allow the light in and radiate the light out.
Mm-hmm. One last question for you. In your article, you use an allegory that I like very much. You say that sexual release may be the closest we get to an experience of actual physical death. Can you talk to us a little bit more about this?
I believe that spirituality, the energy of spirituality and the energy of sexuality are in essence the same energy. They both are about the urge to merge. And sexuality is the urge to merge on the horizontal plane with other people, whereas spirituality is the urge to merge with the oneness on a universal level, on a vertical level. And so when, and that urge to merge is the surrendering, the becoming one with, the giving up the boundaries of a false self so that we can merge the oneness of our bigger self. And that's what I think happens when we go into, that's what orgasm is about. But there is also a vertical orgasm. It's that orgasm that comes from spiritual connection that is so profound and so deep that we expand beyond the limits of our normal walking around in self and mind.
Mm-hmm. So we've come to the end of our interview. Time really passes by so fast. Is there any last message you would like to share with our listeners on this topic?
Just an encouragement to begin to entertain the idea that there is another way besides externally defending myself. That we can, that there is a way of tapping into that which is here and available to move and protect us, and to encourage all of our listeners to seek that path.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Lynn. It has been a real honor to have you with us today. Send you
a big hug
and big my hug. Really deep thanks and appreciation for this.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, Luciana.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.